Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple, isn't it refreshing?
What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
Great football. Get fired up, Eric Spitz! Get your ass up! It's Football Friday!
Why are you yelling at our program director?
Because he ain't fired up. I know it. Probably mumbling somewhere, grumbling.
He's not even here.
Scowl on his face. He's somewhere.
Yeah, I know he's somewhere.
He ain't fired up. I'm trying to get him fired up. It's Football Friday, baby.
Yeah.
Come on.
Wow.
I'm ready to go.
Sports are happening.
Yeah. Sports is happening. Talking to coaches last night on the show. Gus Malzahn, he's fired up. Let's do it. Kerryon Johnson said he's been intense all week.
Well, I would hope
so. See if that helps. No. Coach is supposed to be chill all week and wait till Saturday to get all intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Coach Nutt gave a pregame speech last night. Whoo!
To who?
To us. He was just saying, what would you say to the Florida Gators? It was good, man.
So he's auditioning on the air for a job somewhere.
Almost tackled Dana Jacobson. It was so good.
College football.
That wouldn't have been a good thing, man.
Oh, he had me fired up. I was ready to run through a brick wall, ready to run through a studio monitor for him.
Well,
yeah.
Okay.
Coach Nutt still has it. Somebody call him. Give him a job so I can be his get-back coach.
Yeah, a pivotal weekend in college football.
Huge.
For sure.
Orca
and imagine
big.
If Florida State didn't stink the way that they did, and you had Clemson, Florida State on top of
that. I know.
We're
not even talking about that. How about that?
Well,
not even talking about that
game. Because all these other games, and you figure Clemson's going to win the game. So we will go in-depth. With the college football.
Yeah, we will. Let's get
college
hurt.
Football.
Let's get hurt like
Yeah. In about 40 minutes, and then Chris Sims is going to join us. He's going to talk some college football and Notre Dame and how good they are, and he's watched them the entire season. But we do start with the Thursday night game last night. Not so much the game itself as Seattle goes on to beat an Arizona team that's just a shell of what they should be. And even if they were all healthy, I don't know if they would be one of the best teams in the NFC. But they are just a mess. They don't have a quarterback. They don't have David Johnson. Adrian Peterson's been good in a couple of games. Larry Fitzgerald's had a nice season. The defense is okay. But they just can't compete, you know, without David Johnson and Carson Palmer there. But it's really about the Seattle Seahawks and what happened last night on Thursday night. And when stuff happens, negative stuff happens to the most outspoken team in the NFL, it becomes a very large deal. And Richard Sherman, and he wasn't the only one that got hurt last night for the Seahawks, but clearly the biggest one. Richard Sherman appears to have torn his Achilles, and he's going to be out for the rest of the season. Now, this was an Achilles injury that was lingering, and it was something that he knew about, and it's something he was dealing with. He even said after the game that, because of his experience, he knew how to put himself in a position to not put too much strain on that Achilles. But because it was a Thursday night game, it ended up being harder for him to do that. Doug Baldwin comes out, says the Thursday night game should be illegal. and now here's this whole discussion coming up again because Richard Sherman got hurt on a Thursday night.
Yeah, we had it last week with Richie Incognito. They were dominating that game versus the Jets, so we summarily dismissed his complaints because they didn't do anything. And now you have the Seahawks, as you mentioned. And it wasn't just Richard Sherman who went out and is out for the season. You had a number of players on that defense. Sheldon Richardson left the game. Jaron Reed left the game. They had a whole host of guys. Branch for the Cardinals.
Cam Chancellor left for a little, and
Branch went down on that first touchdown grab by Jimmy Graham. Now, that's a play where whether you're playing on Sunday or Thursday or Friday, doesn't matter. The way his leg planted. That can happen on any given day. But, you know, there's merit to complaining about Thursday night games. We've talked about it time and time again here, how your body feels, and especially this late in the season. You're over halfway through the season, and I've said it takes at least 6-7 days before you start feeling like yourself again, and you wake up and you do it all over again. Now, these guys have that time frame truncated, and they're trying to get ready. You're trying to instill a game plan, and your body is just not made to rebound as quickly playing at the professional level. I would even say at the college level, your body's not made to rebound as quickly as it ordinarily would if you had a 6 or 7 days to prepare for a game. So that notwithstanding, it doesn't seem like anything's going to change here anytime soon. It's about money, and that was a game where you can look back on it, even with 10 days now left to get ready for your next ball game, and say, man, was it worth the cost?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know how much of these injuries are because of Thursday night and if we're ever going to know. Now, here's a part of this that the Seahawks are not going to want to hear this morning, because they're going to point to the NFL, and it seems like they've got the most cantankerous attitude towards the league as a team. That locker room seems to always have, you know, something going on. But if Richard Sherman and Pete Carroll believe that Achilles, if not managed correctly, is going to pop because they knew about it and they knew that the thing wasn't totally stable, and they know that on Thursday night football that maybe it's not going to be in the same shape it is on a Sunday because you don't get as much treatment, then why is he playing? You know, you can't put all that blame after it happens going, well, we knew this was going to happen because of Thursday night, and Thursday night football sucks. I mean, if you had that much knowledge about it and you were that worried, then I know it's tough because he's one of the best corners in football and you're still fighting. You got a Rams team in your division that's good. I know that that's a tough decision, but guess what's worse than having a secondary without Richard Sherman last night? Having a secondary with Richard Sherman for the rest of the season, which is what you have now.
Yeah, could you have managed this differently, knowing it's a short week? But still, who's to say he wouldn't have sustained the same injury if he had a full week, if you've been dealing with it all year long? So that's a tough one to categorize and place the blame on a Thursday night. You're out there, you're making cuts. So far in the game, everything's fine. And then that one particular play, the thing pops. So maybe it was going to occur no matter when you played. So I'm with you there.
Yeah, and luckily for them, Cam Chancellor just had a stinger. Those things can feel like something else. And
no, they feel like nothing because everything goes numb.
Right. Well, that's what I'm basically, yes, you're right.
He'll be dealing with that the rest of the season. There's nothing you can do about it. He's going to continue to play. He'll try to strengthen it, but it will be there the rest of the season. He will re-injure it because he's a battering ram out there in that secondary. So that's something. I'm sure it's not his first one as hard as he hits, but that's something that will linger.
Yeah, and he was carted off and all that, but it seems like he's gonna be all right after that. And you know, Sherman is the one though that you're concerned about.
And they just traded Jeremy Lane. They traded him to the Texans for Dwayne
Brown.
Did
that fall through though because of his physical? Didn't he fail his physical?
Did he fail it? Is he back with the Seahawks? No. And speaking of Dwayne Brown, he goes down with an ankle injury. It was just a whole host of attrition for the Seahawks last night.
Yeah, they changed the deal because he failed his physical.
Oh,
so
slide him in there.
Right.
Remember how well he was playing until he broke his arm, that freakish injury?
Well, he was awful earlier on this year.
I mean, yeah.
He was, whether you're a pro football focused believer or not, you know, this guy, I mean, he was ranked as one of the worst corners in football.
Fell off.
Yeah, totally fell off. But I guess, it's a good thing that they have him, I would think. Now after this, but he's got to be, I mean, no one's going to be Richard Sherman.
No.
Which is the biggest deal. Now, there's another issue in this game that had to do with injury that people, I think, are going to be talking about a ton. So, midway through the third quarter, Russell Wilson gets hit in the chin from Carlos Dansby. Now, Russell Wilson didn't get up woozy like we saw guys in the past. I forget the one I'm thinking of. Was it T.J. Yates? Was it him? Remember that? Where he got up so woozy and he ended up staying in the game?
No, it was Case Keenum.
Was it? All right, Case Keenum.
Case Keenum when he was with the Rams.
Yeah. So and you're thinking, you know, what in the hell? The guy's got to come out of the game. No. So it wasn't any of that.
No.
But Walt Anderson, the head referee last night, signals, because now he has this power under the new concussion protocol stuff, to send Russell Wilson off to get tested for a concussion. So what happens is Russell Wilson runs off the field, goes into the tent, I think counts to three, and then runs back into the game.
The tent, they were lowering the tent, and he jumps through the opening of the tent before the lowering of the tent is completed.
I mean, now, I don't know if the man had a concussion or not, but what I can say definitively is he didn't get checked for one properly. There is no way that he did. Now, I get the whole, I get getting back in the game, and I get the quarterback stuff, and I totally understand the player's perspective on this. So I will never criticize a player all that much for acting that way, even though I think that they should be looking out for themselves a little bit more. It's really tough to see that in that moment in the middle of a game when you're that competitive.
And when you've been conditioned to fight through that, and now that's why it's great that they've taken the power out of the player's hands.
Right, but everybody else deserves the criticism here. I'm sorry. We can't be talking about this and trying to fix it and doing all of these things and all the stuff you hear and news of Aaron Hernandez and the worst CTE you've ever seen, and then have stuff like that happen on national television. It can't be happening. And I don't know if he played the rest of the game with a concussion, but that doesn't matter. What matters is you've got this new plan in place. Anderson sent him off, and he needs to be evaluated by somebody, and he somehow sneakily ducked every person and got back in the game.
Oh, he said it was just my jaw. Why was there a flag on that play? I mean, clearly he was hit under the chin, and you and I go back and forth on this, and I thought it was a good hit. But quarterbacks, they're usually protected like they're a newborn baby, and yet no flag there. I guess he hadn't been in the league long enough either, like Cam Newton was told a couple of seasons ago. But he said after the ball game, my jaw seemed like it was locked. That was about it. I wasn't woozy. There was no concussion or anything like that.
He still has to go through it, though.
I know he still has to go through it, and that will I'm sure there will be a call made to the Seahawks or the official sitting up high who was supposed to make sure he's taking notice of all those hits and making sure everyone enters the protocol if they feel warranted, and so they will handle it.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, the more of these things that we see with, because there's already, and we agree on the perception reality stuff. I hate when people say perception is reality when sometimes it's not that way. It's just what people think without actually looking into things and getting the truth out of it. You know, perception, sometimes that's just a lazy way of going about it. But there is a perception in the NFL, you know, that they don't know what they're doing when it comes to certain things. And one of those things is the concussions and dealing with concussions. And it's been like that for decades now, because the NFL has hid behind false data and trotted out doctors that were on their payroll to say a bunch of bull crap so they're not on the hook for lawsuits. And all of this stuff we've gone through with this. And now here we are in week 10 of the 2017 season when we feel like we've got a decent handle on all of this. And then one of your biggest stars in the game, who, by the way, is still playing unlike a majority of the league right now, where you have star after star going out, and then that happens, it looks terrible.
I didn't think it looked as bad as you do. I didn't think it looked terrible. They did the eye test. It was obviously whoever sitting up high for that particular game did an eye test and said, okay, it looks fine, and they left it alone. And then Russ Wilson comes out after the game and states that he was fine. It was just his jaw was hurt somewhat from that hit. So the eye test prevailed, where ordinarily with a hit like that, and especially when the referee directs you off the field, you would go through the protocol. But I didn't think he looked woozy, but that doesn't mean he wasn't. You're correct in that observation, but I don't think it looked as terrible as it could have.
So now with the NFC, and Russell Wilson is not going to miss any time, Richard Sherman out for the year, Cam Chancellor will be okay, we believe. But with the Seahawks now having suffered this injury with Richard Sherman, and the Rams being where they are right now, I mean, I have to knock them down a peg. You just have to, especially when you saw now Deshaun Watson's special, but especially when you saw him just carving up that Seattle secondary in the way that he did, just shows you, you know, that they're capable of that happening, and that happened in Seattle too. So now you're going to have even bigger issues with that. They still can't run the ball all that well.
Nope.
But
lost CJ Prosize.
Yes, I mean, and they've got, you know, Rawls, who has been up and down. They've got JD McKissick. I mean, there's not a lot going on there. That offensive line still isn't great, even though it's improved some. But it's basically, I mean, it's Russell Wilson on that offense and Doug Baldwin, and one of the other guys tends to step up, whether it's Lockett or Richardson. And Graham's actually been better this year than he has been in previous
years.
He's been
outstanding.
Yeah. So you have that. But, I mean, I look at the Rams as like a – I just look at them as a better team right now, even though when the two met, I really liked the Seahawks in that game. They ended up hanging on the end. But, I mean, the Rams are a healthier, more complete team, in my opinion, right now.
No, I would agree. And they're going to put a ton of pressure on your secondary with all those wide receivers. We witnessed that firsthand here when they took on the Giants. So going into this next matchup, you would have to give the Rams the heads up because of their firepower on the offensive side of the ball. So the offense for the Seahawks will have to carry today, I would think, because how many pass rushers can you count on that D-line? Cliff Avril's been out for the Seahawks for a while now, may be done for the season, and there's some question whether or not he even returns to football. So can they go out and make some moves? Who knows who's out there that they could plug into their defense now? Maybe some rookie or someone vet who they picked up and then released during the preseason. So I'm sure they're scouring waiver wires and everything else to see who can come in and help shore up that secondary. And Earl Thomas has been out. You know, his hammy has been bothering him, so you lose another leader on that defense. So they're going to be scrambling to shore up their secondary.
And this is the last thing I'll say about Thursday Night Football. These teams and these players, they need to plan ahead more and not bitch after the fact. I am so tired of this.
They've been bitching, though. This is new.
Exactly. I know, but I'm saying that it's enough's enough now. How many years have we gone through this? How long do you know that you've got that Thursday night game on the schedule? When does the schedule come out? Was it March or April or something? You know months and months ahead of time that this game is happening then.
But no one's talking to them then. There's no cameras in their face.
No,
it's off-season, and they don't get the bitch until
what I'm saying is plan ahead. Plan accordingly. Figure it out. Do different things. As the coach, you know that it's there. It doesn't sneak up on you. It's not like after that Sunday game, like, oh, by the way, you're going to be playing on Thursday. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, figure out a way whether you got to manage guys or I don't know. Maybe different guys get playing time. But just you can't complain about it anymore. It's not going to go away.
And maybe it will. Maybe the more they complain, at some point it'll resonate with the league office and they do away with it. Maybe. Keep it up. Yeah, it's tough. Right. I don't know how you can plan against. I mean, you play in Washington Sunday and they lose that ball game, of course. So that's a tough team, especially defensively, and turned out to be even tougher offensively because Kirk Cousins threw some dimes down the stretch. So who are you going to sit playing that game, and you're at home, so you want everyone to play, and then you have to go on the road and play a divisional foe. So it's tough to manage that. It's not like the NBA where you got 162 of them.
Yeah, well, the reason why it's not going to go away, no matter what anybody says or complains about it, is they are triple dipping right now with Thursday Night Football.
And you get colorful uniforms to purchase.
They're getting money from CBS, NBC, and Amazon.
And Amazon.
To put this garbage on the air. Triple dipping.
Yep.
So that's
good to be
why.
The king.
Right, exactly.
Can the Seahawks also stop with the penalties? 12 penalties last night. Arizona should not have been in that game. Should not have been in that game. Drew Stanton was overthrowing, underthrowing wide receivers. He had maybe one or two good throws. But other than that, they should not have been in that game if not for all the penalties.
Coming up next, unbelievably, there's another turn with the Ezekiel Elliott case.
It's like a soap opera, isn't it?
It's worse. We're coming right back.
Talk to Gio and Jones now. 855-212-4CBS.
What's going on?
Andrew. Hi, my best friends. The Seahawks led only by 5. They were facing a 2nd and 21 near midfield early fourth quarter last night in Arizona. And then Russell Wilson did this.
Shotgun snap comes into Wilson. Fakes the give to McKissick. Rolls left. Holds it on his hip. Now he's going to scramble around back to the right side. Backing up to the 30-yard line. Scrambling. Throwing down the left sideline. Caught by Baldwin at the 45. Down
the sideline with a block to the 30, to the 20, Baldwin to the 10, and shoved out of bounds inside the 5. Russell Wilson pulling a rabbit out of his...
Calm down, Kevin Kugler.
Oh, man. So was he throwing it away, or was he throwing it to Doug Baldwin or someone in the vicinity?
I think he was throwing it to Baldwin.
There were two receivers. There's one a little higher up the field than Baldwin. I thought he knew there were receivers over there, and he was hoping one of them would catch it.
That play covered 54 yards. The next play was Wilson's second touchdown pass of the night to Jimmy Graham. The Seahawks a 22-16 win now, even with the Rams in the win column at 6 atop the NFC West. But it all comes at a huge cost. Richard Sherman suffering a season-ending torn Achilles, which he apparently saw coming.
It's been bothering me all season. So, you know, it's one of them things you just have to play through as long as you can. And then, you know, when it goes, it goes.
Sherman, one of seven.
I mean, is that really the right approach, though? I mean, so you're telling me that he knew. He's basically saying that he knew it was going to go at some point.
That it was an injury, yeah.
Right. But it was inevitable.
That it was going to pop. So, like, you can't, there's nothing you can do?
I have never sustained an Achilles injury. I have friends who have torn theirs. I don't know if it's something you could just play with and you know eventually it's going to pop unless you just sit out and start rehabbing it and saying the season's over now to avoid that.
I wonder, though, like, what if he, like, the first 6 games of the season or first 8 weeks of the season, he rehabbed to the point where he could play now till the end, when you know that they're going to be in the mix somehow in the postseason, and then it's not popping and he's not out for the rest of the year, and it's not something that he may not even be ready for by training camp next year. You know, I mean, it just seems weird to me, like, oh, we're just going to play and play and play until it pops, and whenever it pops, it pops.
Eventually it's going to go, so let's go play.
I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think you might be taking his words a little too literally. I don't think he knew that there was a definite end date coming, but his Achilles was a problem, and it was a, you know, and he also goes on to say, like, you can't talk me out of not playing. So
right, he hadn't missed a game entire career.
Right, he could have gotten through the season just fine and then addressed it afterwards. That wasn't like he knew it was going to tear at some point, but
it sounded like that.
It also
though.
Can be a sudden injury, and I think his point was, my Achilles hasn't been great, so I'm not shocked that this happened.
Okay.
Either way, he's out. 6 other Seattle regulars were lost during that game last night. On the flip side, Cardinal running back Adrian Peterson held to just 29 yards on 21 carries. He fumbled to start the night and was pulled down in the end zone for a safety.
I love when you almost get the carry-yard ratio right perfect. You know, 21 carries, 29 yards, almost perfect there. Almost
even. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
Exactly,
either.
Yeah.
Ezekiel Elliott denied another injunction yesterday by the 2nd U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. The Cowboy running back has one more route left to get back on the field soon, but for now he will not play this weekend and would miss 4 games total until his next court date on December 1st. The Patriots claim tight end Martellus Bennett off waivers from the Packers yesterday. And if the Giants are to fire head coach Ben McAdoo and or GM Jerry Reese, it reportedly will not happen during the season. The 76ers 5-game winning streak snapped in Sacramento last night, 109-108. Brett Brown's team allowed the final 7 points of the game.
We've been doing well closing out games, and we went rogue. We didn't show the discipline. That thing you're talking about is the end result of chaos. And, you know, that's part of young guys learning how to play smarter.
De'Aaron Fox knocked down the winning Jay with 13 seconds
left. Boston Police Commissioner Brett Brown, right?
Chaos.
Yeah, chaos.
The Rockets kept the Cavaliers struggling, 117-113 in Houston. Cleveland has dropped 6 of 8, a triple-double for James Harden, 35 points, 11 rebounds, and 13 assists. The Thunder losing their 4th straight, 102-94 in Denver. The Wizards handled the Lakers, 111-95, and the Raptors outscored the Pelicans, 122-118. An MRI in the right ankle of Celtic rookie Jason Tatum came back negative. He's questionable for tonight against Charlotte. Japanese star Shohei Ohtani will be posted for major league teams. That, according to Japanese media reports, the 23-year-old is 3-2 with a 3.20 ERA while hitting .332 with 8 homers and 33 RBI. And Jaromir Jagr scored his first goal as a Calgary Flame last night in a 6-3 defeat of Detroit. Boys?
That guy's actually very interesting, that Ohtani guy, because he wants to pitch and hit. Like, and he wants to be a pitcher and a right fielder.
Go to the National League, right? Where he can at least get the hit if he's just a pitcher.
No. He wants to play 4 days and pitch a 5th.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
he wants
what he
to.
Wants. Yes. He wants to be the right fielder every day other than when he's pitching.
Huh. That's cool.
I know it's, but it is cool. But is a team going to let him do that, or do they get a compromise where he's a DH a couple of days a week when he's not pitching, as opposed to being out there every single day? Because you think, I mean, it's sometimes. I guess
sweet.
He's been doing this, but
right.
I mean, don't you get exhausted?
Not when you're 23, you're fine.
I don't know.
Play every position at 23. No sleep.
Yeah, but I mean, every day you're out there in right field, and then on that other day you're out there, you know, trying to go eight
innings. Give him a day off before he has to pitch.
I mean, I don't. But
that'd be an interesting experiment. I'd look forward to seeing that.
But it's gonna happen because he doesn't like whatever team ends up getting him. I think is gonna have to agree ahead of time. To say this is what we want, because that's exactly what
he
wants to do.
I love it that we can get away with these get away from pitch counts and all that stuff, and just go out there and be a baseball player and play till your arm falls off.
Yeah, I don't think we'll get away from it, but this guy's going to show up a lot of people. That's for sure. You know, well, Ohtani's doing it, right? You know, oh yeah, oh go tell it to Ohtani that you need an extra day off today.
Exactly.
All right, Bogus, thanks, man. So you heard some of the details from Bogus about the latest with Ezekiel Elliott. He showed up in court yesterday here in New York, and there's just so much to sift through. And I think. You know, for fans, I don't think they really care about the details. Because, I mean, at this point, I don't even care about the details anymore, except the big facts, which are, can he play or can he not play? And right now, he cannot play. How long is he going to be suspended for? It's at least 4 games because you're not going to be able to be heard until December with his last appeal. So that's what you know. And is there any other way out? Which the answer is yes. In December, there is one more opportunity for him to get out of this, or at least, I mean, get the last 2 games knocked off of it.
Right. So he's going to sit out 4 games. So more than half of the suspension that was initially handed down, and the saga continues. And the running joke we had last night was, okay, suspend it, but give it 2 hours. Yeah. It'll be reinstated, because that's the way it's been going. The pendulum just swings back and forth in this deal. But, yeah, he's going to have to sit down for 4 games and just, you know, bite the bullet and deal with it, and maybe the last two get lopped off. I wouldn't be surprised if they're not. And you know, we're here. He's crossed the Rubicon. All the legal wrangling and recourse seems like it's come to an end. Other than these last 2 games that are left on the suspension.
Yeah, and it's unbelievable because I think with this same and just trying to get through this and listening and reading stuff. Like the same stuff that was said in the court yesterday that led to him being off of the field for this week and the next 3 was said essentially the first time around that allowed him to play week 1. Remember that whole thing?
Mm-hmm.
They were like, oh, well, you can play week 1. And people are like, well, wait a second. All this language is saying that the suspension's got to start, but he's got to play week 1. We weren't sure why. And now they're saying he can't play until this second thing is heard.
Well, and it's also interesting that the judge yesterday ruled that the league did not have to take into consideration the testimony of its lead investigator. That's been the whole crux of this thing. Why wouldn't you listen to the person who you have charged with going out and investigating this thing, who talked to both parties involved and felt like no suspension was warranted? So it's just a huge legal mess right now.
And it should have never gotten there. I mean, and I know this is the court's problem now, and it's not the NFL that you can blame for this. But, I mean, you can blame them for when they overstep their bounds. And then this stuff happens. And it happened because they were the catalyst for it to happen. And for Ezekiel Elliott, I mean, this guy firmly believes that he's innocent, and he's got to be going through this whole deal, and whatever Jerry Jones' phrase was the other day, where he's basically saying, you know, an overcorrection, that's what it was.
Right.
An overcorrection, which is what I've been saying since the beginning.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with Brady and Spygate, an overcorrection, because you didn't get it right the first time. Same thing with Ellie. You didn't get Ray Rice right, you didn't get Josh Brown right, you didn't get any of these guys right, and now you have to say you're tough on domestic violence, so now we don't even care if he did it or not. There's some stuff out there, so we're going to suspend his ass. And for 6 games, bottom line, Tough.
Yeah.
I mean, stop.
Yeah, this is all about PR and perception, and the league wants to look be looked upon as someone that keeps its players in line, and they are not in the babysitting business. They're in the professional football business, and if the legal authorities say, hey, we can't bring a case here, that should supersede anything the league hands out.
Yeah, and give Goodell an extension, right? I can't even get that out of my mouth. Give Goodell an extension after all this. I mean, this nonsense that's going on. It seems like there's more garbage that we talk about off the field and on the field, but the commissioner deserves $40 million a year. Randy's in Little Rock. He's on CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Randy? Go ahead.
Hey, fellas. How's it going this morning?
Good, well, Randy. What do you got for us?
I got a simple solution for all this Thursday night football, because I love Thursday night football.
Okay.
But the thing about it is, what they should do, at least I blame the schedulers, because due to the fact that if you know they're going to play on Thursday, why don't they just give them the Sunday off before they play on Thursday? Give them their bye week then. Because, like, if you think about it, the Dallas Cowboys and the Detroit Lions, they play every Thanksgiving, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you would think they would get that Sunday off before they play on Thursday. So why wouldn't you just, you know, make it to where you may have to work out a few kinks here and there?
Yeah, but I think it's harder than just that. It's a really, really good idea, Randy, but I think there has to be a reason why they're not doing that.
And here's the deal with the Thursday night games. Historically, you're right. Cowboys traditionally and the Lions have hooked up. And when I was growing up, it was Cowboys and Washington would play Thursday night, Thanksgiving on Thursdays. And so you know that going in. It's at the latter part of the season, and you have so much adrenaline going on surrounding a holiday. And so that helps you get through that short week, knowing the fact that, you know, family's around and it's a huge game and everyone's going to be watching this ball game, because it only happens once a year where you're playing on a Thursday. So those are the different set of circumstances, as opposed to now where everyone's going to have a Thursday night date and it's not looked upon fondly.
Yeah, and I think that you have, like, you need to have someone have a bye week in week 2 and 3, and then usually with the first ones we see are 4. So, I mean, I like what
Randy is offering in theory, but is it practical? That's probably the issue.
I would say probably not. College football talk next.
Follow us on Twitter at Gio and Jones.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Huge college football weekend.
What?
The biggest we've seen all year.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Last week.
No, this is bigger.
7 games.
This is bigger.
Ranked on rank.
This is bigger than that.
This is bigger.
You've got 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
4. 5.
5.
That's bigger.
5 is bigger than 7 on G.O.
Yeah.
Jones.
Well, you've got 2 in the top 4 that are playing other ranked teams. How about that one?
How about that?
So that's why I feel
one
like
it's bigger. 1 versus 10, Georgia, mm-hmm. Auburn.
That's right.
And 5 versus 7, TCU, Oklahoma.
Yeah, I'm talking about the top. Notre Dame, Miami would be
Notre
the other
Dame,
one.
Miami, yes. 3 versus 7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all bigger? Do I have an argument? No?
Damn.
Maybe I do.
Hate it when he right.
All right.
When he half right.
Well, of course, the one we care about the most is Georgia and Auburn, because it's on CBS, right?
No, I care about all of them, but yeah, okay, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, 3:30. Make sure you tune in. Before that, though, Florida, South Carolina, I care about that, too.
Yeah, I think that the two games that interest me the most are Georgia and Auburn and Miami and Notre Dame, out of mm-hmm. all of them. And there's some other, I mean, Oklahoma, TCU is going to be a great one, too, but I put those other two ahead of it. And we're going to disagree on Georgia and Auburn. I mean, I have not been given a reason to believe that anybody can beat Auburn at this point. And the best argument I get for them is that when they're in a tight game and a team stacks the box and that defense is stopping their run game and they are down in a game, is Jake Fromm going to be able to do everything he needs to do to lead that offense to a victory? And I think it's a lot harder than people think to just stop a run attack so much so that they got to lean on him with the way that they've been playing football. But my answer is yes.
Yeah.
I mean, has he shown you anything that says that he can't?
Nope.
All right, then. So, fine. So, that's why Georgia's not getting enough respect this week in my eyes, but I know you like Auburn, so try to sell me on it.
Why are they not getting respect? I think they're getting a ton of respect.
The line is low. Everybody thinks at Auburn. How many times do you hear this week, well, Auburn runs a table, they're going to go right into the college football playoff? To me, it shouldn't even be a discussion.
That's just speculating, and Auburn deserves
no
to
respect.
Be... Auburn deserves respect because of that defense. Now, offensively, they've struggled at times. Of course, you go back to the Clemson game, 11 sacks, LSU in the second half after posting 23 points, post nothing, and they had 4 sacks in that ball game. And now, though, they've gotten healthy at the wide receiver position. Darius Slayton has given them opportunity to chunk the ball down the field. But in the running game, although Petway's not there, you got Kerryon Johnson, Cam Martin, they're going to have to be huge. But even more so, I'm not even worried about Jake Fromm. He's proven that he's wiser beyond than his years because the true freshman coming in and playing like he has. He can make all the throws. He acts like he belongs. Jarrett Stidham has to be the catalyst for this game for a win if Auburn is to win the ball game. I think he has to play his best game, and we haven't seen that in the marquee matchups. You didn't see it versus Clemson because he was running for his life. You didn't see it in the second half versus LSU, only 9 completions in that ball game. I thought they were throwing the ball down the field too much, no intermediate passes. So the defense comes as advertised. Even Kirby Smart said this will be the best defense we have faced all season long. There were some big boys up front, 330, 308. This Holland kid leads him with sacks and tackles for loss. Carlton Davis in that secondary.
To that point, Auburn's offense against great defenses the last couple of years, how's it worked out?
That's what I just said.
I know.
That's why it's time for it to work out.
It's not going to.
I think it will.
No.
And they'll win by at least one.
No.
Half a point. No.
They're going to win by a half a
half
point?
Half a point.
So you think that the Auburn defense...
Give it away. I'm not telling you yet. You have to wait just
All right, so...
I'm just saying there's a reason why... you say Georgia's being disrespected. I don't believe so.
Yeah,
it's a rivalry game.
Disrespect.
It's on the plains. You're playing there in their house. That place is going to be nuts. It'll be crazy, and you're going up against a damn good defense. They've proven it now 2 years in a row that they're pretty good.
That's the theme of my picks. Disrespectful spreads.
Disrespectful.
Disrespectful spreads.
Yeah. So, okay, what's the next game the next team you think is being disrespected?
Michigan State. That spreads up to 17 now.
Ow!
17? You're telling me more than 2 touchdowns? They can't keep this game at that? Why? Because Ohio State's angry.
Yes, they are so angry.
So what? What were they last week, huh? Asleep?
They were happy.
I mean, I don't understand. I mean, you're telling me that the mood of a team that just got blown out is the best that you got for me?
Yeah, you just got your asses kicked. You were just dominated. You were pushed around on the field. They posted 55 on you. Your head coach has never had 55 posted on any team he's ever coached, from Pop Warner to the Mac and to now to the Big Ten. So, yes, they're going to be angry, and they're in their backyard, and they're going to come out and they're going to play like it.
Okay, and maybe they're not that good. Maybe it's just anger that has nothing to do with it. Maybe last week we saw that season turn for the worse, and it's not going to come back. So that's another. I do think Ohio State will win, but 17 is just a slap in the face of a team that's 7-2 and has been playing really, really damn well in Michigan State.
And this is a pretty good defense, so I'm with you. I think that is a slap in the face. Now I'm angry.
Yeah, I told you, man.
Slapping Mark D'Antoni in the D'Antoni or whatever his damn name is in the face.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, I can't even pronounce his name. And why are you mumbling, Mikey B?
Well, that's his MO. That's his brand, is the mumble. He's
There's a song I should hip you to, the mumble rap.
Oh, yeah?
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Miami Notre Dame has been talked about so much this week, and it's really because of the history there, and I know I'm not going to bring up the old name of the rivalry.
You better not.
I will not say Catholics versus convicts. I'm sorry. That was an accident. But, I mean, this is really, you know, this Miami team that has gotten to this point with some unbelievable comebacks, with some cardiac kid games, whatever cliche phrase you want to use, you know, against this Notre Dame team that we're going to talk to Chris Sims about in 10 minutes. that just leans on you, pushes you around, runs the football down your throat. I mean, I just see this being one of these games where it's all about time of possession, and Notre Dame is just going to dominate and then just suffocate this particular matchup with no disrespect, because that's the theme, to Miami. I just think that when you've got that many pro offensive linemen, running game, and a quarterback that's getting better every week, they're just too good.
And you have a defense in Miami, the front seven I've loved. They've got some bona fides potential superstars on this defense. Pinkley and Quarterman at the linebacker position, and Jack Johnson on the D-line. I mean, these guys are some horses up front. They can roll, but they are allowing 170 yards on the ground. And you got a team coming in that's averaging three-something on the ground. So what's going to give? NC State came in as number six rush defense. Notre Dame is the number six rush offense. And they gave to NC State. And I think you will see the same here. But the one feather in the cap of Miami, plus 11 in turnover margin. They have been pretty good at forcing the team into mistakes. Last week, four turnovers by Virginia Tech, and Miami capitalized on that. And whereas Miami had three turnovers, and Virginia Tech couldn't do anything with it. So it should be a fun game. But I think the running game for Notre Dame will prevail. It's going to be a damn good one. I'm looking forward to that one.
And TCU Oklahoma, I'll just let you run with that one in the last minute here before we have to go to a break and talk to Chris Sims. But I mean, this is classic defense versus offense, strength against strength. I'm going to lean towards the offense because I think the offense is a little bit better. Oklahoma's offense, the best unit in the nation.
-6, right?
Yes.
I believe it's OU -6. I would say it's going to be about around there, yeah, less than a touchdown victory for Oklahoma. And the defense, and they say they don't play defense in the Big 12. Well, that's a misnomer. You have what you had last week there in Bedlam, and it was Bedlam. There's a reason they call it Bedlam, because it's always crazy, a scene of just a crazy uproar, and that's what you had. But TCU has always hung his hat on the defensive side of the ball. Last year was an aberration, but they've always been dynamite, and whether they're playing in the WAC, the Mountain West, and now the Big 12. So they're playing mighty good defense. Once again, held my Longhorns to 9 yards rushing. That's it. That offensive line for Texas is not the same as this offensive line for Oklahoma. Big Orlando Brown Jr. on that side of the ball. This would be a different animal for the TCU Horned Frogs to tame.
It's 6.5 right now. That's spread.
Cool. Oklahoma. And I tell you who's being disrespected. Iowa, -12. I mean, Wisconsin favorite -12? Did I see that correctly? You know me, I can't read.
You might be right. I don't know. I have to.
-12?
Well, man, Wisconsin's a powerhouse, man. Let's go.
Iowa just put 55 on Ohio State.
Yeah, I know. But apparently that doesn't count for Ohio State.
That's disrespect.
So it shouldn't count for
Kirk Ferentz and the Hawkeyes. Come on, man. Really?
Too many damn spreads on this sheet.
Mm-hmm.
It's 12. Yes,
it is 12.
Right. Yeah.
What? They just lost the best wide receiver. The middle linebacker, Chris Orr, is not going to play.
That's all right.
Hornibrook has thrown an interception in 6 straight, 9 on the season.
They're like a starfish. You cut off the arm and just regenerates into a new one. Seafish, schmeefish. They'll be fine. Gio and Jones, CBS Sports Radio.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Disney refreshing!
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.